Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon or good evening, depends on where you're joining us from or what time you're listening to this podcast, from which part of the world you're listening to us from. And I understand we have almost 50 countries now listening to this podcast. So I really appreciate you guys joining me in on this journey as we record episode 253. And with episode 253 today, I've been thinking about this topic for quite a while now. As you know, I've been working in the industry for almost 30 years now in the localization industry. And everybody, as you guys are aware, I've changed jobs. I left my corporate job and I'm independent. I'm alone, working alone from my home office. And as I contemplate what to do next after so many years in the corporate world. And so the question that everybody keeps asking me, hey, Robin, do you want to retire? Have you thought about retiring? And I, to be honest with you, it never crossed my mind because even though I left my corporate job, I sort of continued with my work. I still get up at 5 a.m. in the morning. I still sit at my desk at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I still have full days of work till sometimes till 11 o'clock. I think I'm working more harder now than I worked at my corporate job. So one of the things that we want to talk about today is that has been on people's mind is as they transition through their careers, they go from, doing something, whatever that something is, independent, you work for somebody else, or you have a career of some sort, and then you move on to retire, to not necessarily go lay down on a beach somewhere, but you may want to try something else in your life. And my guest today, Harry Agers, I really appreciated Harry joining me today. And we want to talk about this topic a little bit. Harry wrote a book on this, and he's going to tell us all about it here in a minute. But what we want to do is first, welcome Harry to the conversation. Harry, welcome to the conversation. Appreciate it with me.
Thank you, Robin. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. Harry, as we say on this channel, everybody gets the easy question first. the easy question is, what is the story question? What is your story, Harry? What got you here?
My story really began even before I retired. I'm a radiologist with a particular interest in nuclear medicine and what's called PET scanning, having to do with cancer detection. And I was in a wonderful practice for 36 years and then sort of started to feel like, it was time to think about moving, on. And it was not an easy thing to do. And I think for anybody, a physician or otherwise, anyone who's very, very wrapped up in their work, it can be very difficult to make that transition. And I think we're going to get into some of the details of why and how you go about making that an easier move. So I really did not have much of a plan when I retired. I had a strong interest in photography. I wanted to move on with that, and we can discuss that in a little bit. But what I started to do before I retired is I started to fill out some lists. I decided to make some lists, and I think it was important. There's actually a statistic that if you write something down, you have about a 34% greater chance of actually coming out with an actionable consequence of that or something that's really helpful. And the first list I decided to do was things that I love. And so the first thing was my wife, my family, very concrete things, photography, teaching, et cetera. And the second one is a little more conceptual. And I'm, the purpose of the list is to get you to be more cognizant and more self-aware of what you really, really care about, and just beginning that process of separating yourself from your work personality, which is so, so strong. So the second list is what gives you satisfaction. And for me, this is a little more conceptual. So things like learning, being curious, I like to be organized as with the list and this sort of thing. And then the third one was things that I would be willing to try and to experiment with. And I think between the three, you can really start getting some image of what your life could be going forward. I found those to be very helpful. I got involved in my photography, and then basically I kept a journal. And so I've been retired for 11 years. I kept a journal. I did a lot of reading, and I came up with a huge amount of information, and ultimately decided to write a book. And when I first came out, almost all of the books were about finance. And they might have a little tiny chapter in there about the emotional part. And I decided that I had enough information to write a helpful work that would be geared totally towards the emotional and personal side and not the financial at all. And so that's sort of how the journey got going, and never expected to write a book. It took about 3 years using that journal as an outline, and I've loved it. And the thing I love doing now is speaking and doing interviews like this and just getting the word out and trying to make things a little easier for people.
And for the audience, so, you know, just from a context perspective, just to give you an idea about Harry's bio, I guess, retired radiologist, clinical professor at Columbia University, Irving Medical Center, an award-winning photographer, not just hobby photographer, an award-winning photographer. I went to your website, by the way, and I am a hobby photographer as well. So we'll talk about that in a second. And the author of the next best year's book that we are going to be discussing here in a second. Now, Harry, for those who are out there and they had many years in the same career, 36 years in radiology in New York Presbyterian in Columbia, that's not just a career. That's a professional identity it becomes to somebody, right? So, and we all have that, an engineer, a translator, a professor, whoever you are. When did you sense first that retirement is something more emotional than financial? And what led you to the emotional part versus the, as you mentioned earlier, everybody writes about retirement as a financial. I'm always looking at what your equivalent in the US, the 401k retirement fund. Do I have enough to retire? Yes or no? But you took it a different angle, emotional angle. Like, why?
Well, I think the financial component is extremely important, obviously, for everybody. I just want to make one point clear is that my practice was at Hackensack University Medical Center, Hackensack Meridian Health in New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
And my Columbia was where I trained and where I teach. And voluntarily. So I want to make sure I give credit where credit is due. I think I was financially stable, and at that point, after 36 years, and the challenge was finding something that was going to give me purpose and something that was going to make me want to get up in the morning and be excited and feel like I'm really being useful, contributing something. So there's certainly a large component of just enjoying yourself and learning, et cetera. But, you know, there was also a part of me that wanted to continue to contribute, much as, I did as a physician. So that's sort of what motivated me in terms of going towards that emotional side, and also the tremendous lack of literature on this. And I'm very happy I wrote the book, because I wish I had had that, 11 years ago. It would have been very helpful to have, somebody there who was like a friend telling me, here are some things you can do. So my speaking and the book are not about this is how Harry does it. You've got to do it this way. It's more about helping you decide how you want to go about doing things.
And for those of us, including myself, I guess, when you stayed as a volunteer at the clinical professor, that's what somebody would call half step. You did not really exit the entire profession. You stayed a little bit involved, and then you took on another step, which is the planning that the next phase, I guess, as you called it, or the next break in your career. Is it because you couldn't let go, or why you stayed halfway?
No. Well, let me just say this. I think in terms of the transition, one of the best things you can do is to work part time in your field,
yep,
if they will allow it. And that
part of the plan, basically, right, Harry?
Excuse me?
Part of the plan, basically.
Yeah,
you planned
it
that
way. If you can, you know, work 3 days a week or 4 days a week and then slowly, you know, ratchet it down, that's a wonderful way to transfer because you're still staying with what you know and you know, hopefully liked. And but you're able to have time to start looking into some other new things. My teaching is, and it's, this is a point I would like to make to anybody. I think it's extremely fulfilling, the volunteer teaching. And it is not a heavy duty time requirement. I am giving several lectures a year. It gets more concentrated when the residents are taking their board exams. And so it doesn't have to be a major commitment if you can arrange to do that. And you can also teach in many ways outside of your own area of expertise. You can go to libraries and teach, you know, people who teach them English, who have not, that's when it's not their primary language. If you have a financial background, you could teach finance, you know, to a high school, which would be very interesting, I think, to do and fun to do. So there are many, many things that can happen. I didn't want to let go. I did want to stay involved, at least to some extent, but I was definitely at that point ready to move on.
Now, Susan, your publisher, described to me your message in her message to me as addressing about your book and about the message in the book is addressing the part of retirement that financial planning alone can't address. What do you think the conversation that is not happening right now, around us everywhere, that you felt compelled to start? And I think the audience right now, pretty much everybody is thinking, do I have enough money to retire?
Well, again, you know, that's certainly important. I think that I'm trying to think of what exactly made me turn. Can we rephrase the question?
Yeah, no, just maybe on the rephrasement of the question. Everybody in the world right now is thinking when they get to that, 50s, early retirement or late retirement, it doesn't matter. I've seen people work, even though they can retire, I've seen people continue working past retirement age till like 75 in the same job. That's not an indication of, want to do something different or not. But most people, I want to say 80 to 90% of the people, they measure one thing. Can I retire? Do I have enough money to retire after I stop working? And that's the only, I want to say, barometer they use in deciding what they want to do next in their life. They want to go travel the world. They want to hang out on a cruise somewhere. I don't know. But what you're saying in the text, in the message that you're propagating in the book, you're publishing in the book, is that don't think about it financially, think about it emotionally first. What do you want to do next? Now, for people who can say, okay, financially is important. I know I've got my 401k are doing well, and I can now focus on thinking about it emotionally. But what if somebody who doesn't have perhaps enough fun to think about it emotionally, they will always be stuck in that financial thinking, don't they?
Okay. I think if finance can be a huge component of all this. And if you are forced to retire or you are, considering it and you still need to make money, I think it is important to take at least some part of that. You have a right to take some part of that and make it strictly about you. And, if you're making money for, support people, et cetera, that's wonderful. It's necessary. But I think you still have a right to take a small, at least some part of what you're doing, where you can do the things that we're talking about, which is really expanding yourself beyond, where you've been for the last 30 or plus years. Two things I want to mention. One is that this is no longer just an event. Robin, can be 25% of your life. All right. And we're not addressing what you had mentioned about someone who, works till they're 75 or 80. That's still a little bit unusual. But no matter what, this could, if you're lucky, if things go well, you could have 20 years of this. And think about how much you change between 20 and 40 and how much you change between 40 and 60. It's massive. So you can take it lightly, the emotional part, for a while. And, but eventually, sitting, popping, popcorn on the couch, watching, football or playing golf is going to, wear a little bit thin. And so I think, let me go back one step also to say that one of the difficulties is what's called enmeshment, that we have been doing something for decades and we completely see ourselves as what we are defined by our careers. And it can be very difficult to go past that. And the people who can go past that are the ones who have a successful emotional retirement. I think, what I'm interested in is getting people to start thinking about other parts of their personality, of their life, and their whole lifetime experience, which I call the experience brain, and bring things that have been pushed back all these years and bring them forward so that you can start really thinking about some things that would make you feel very, very satisfied beyond work. So in my case, I tried a lot of things. And one of my key points is that you free yourself up, give yourself a break. I talk about the four freedoms and four freedoms are crucial. And we can get into that. And they're crucial in terms of this is a unique time in your life. And there are ways to go about it. And it's just letting loose and letting the child come back out, letting the things that you've been pushing off and off for years and years, and letting those come to the forefront.
Now, Harry, for the audience, the title of the book, again, one more time, Next Year's Best Years. And the subtitle of the book is Personal and Emotional Well-Being. It's more clinical framing, in my opinion, than, for instance, Live Your Best Life. That would have been another subtitle. Why that language? And what does it signal as to who is the book is really for?
I think it signals what we were talking about. Again, to make it very clear to people, that's not a financial book, that this is about the emotional challenges and solutions that come along with retirement. The book is for actually three audiences. One would be people who are considering retirement in the next 5 years. And these are most of the people who are thinking, what am I going to do? How am I going to fill this time? How am I going to have a sense of purpose? How am I going to meet new people when I've no longer, spending a lot of time with my colleagues at work? There is a lot that can be done, and I highly suggest people start thinking about this well before they retire. The next group is the group who have been retired for a while but are not all that happy, and they're looking for something more. And that's the other part of the title, which is taking your retirement to the next level. And then the third group, which is often overlooked, are the spouses or the partners. Who have established a life of their own, and all of a sudden this person, is no longer going to work and they're walking around the house and they're following you. And I think the significant other can be very, very helpful to their partner with many of these things. So those are the three groups that I'm really going after.
Now, for the audience, also, Harry is an award-winning photographer, and he donates your fine art, Harry, photography to hospitals around the country, my understanding, unless the research is wrong, to create calmer, healing environment. And as a radiologist, you've spent, and this is when I first got intrigued in the idea of doing a podcast with you, a radiologist looking at images all his life, working for a living, and then he takes images, take pictures of nature, etc., and he's still in the image business, basically. Yes. Is there a through line here
between what you've done? That is no coincidence. You're right on the money. That is no coincidence. My whole life, I have been more of a visual person. I learn better by watching instructional videos or lectures than I do reading, for example. So I'm very, very image oriented. It all actually began. My dad gave me a camera when I was 10 years old, and it just happened. I mean, I just went, this is the coolest thing ever. And, you know, I love playing around with it. And what happened in retirement, there are a couple of components to this, was that I had thousands of pictures all over the place, and I wanted to organize them, and I finally had the time to do that and to learn more about photography, take more classes, et cetera. It was interesting because I wanted to sell my photographs. And I went through this phase, and all I can tell you is that being an artist is incredibly difficult. And I have great admiration for anyone who is doing it. And you know, a simple example is the fact that, you know, as a physician, when you make a phone call, people pick up, and, you know, there's no hesitation going on there. You know, they get on the line and you discuss things. You call someone as a photographer, and or an artist, and no one picks up the phone and nobody calls you back, and you just sit around waiting for someone who likes the work that you do. And I tried a number of things. So one of the biggest was I was lucky enough to get into an exhibition, and I spent 4 days there. I talked to a minimum of 500 people, and when it was all said and done, I sold one print. And I was shocked, and I decided, you know, that's where I started the four freedoms. And the first freedom is freedom from failure, and the concept of failure. And I was like, what was I thinking? I mean, I want to enjoy my photography. Why do I have to sell it? But I was still in that mode of like giving myself a grade, you know, as I had through my whole education, and wanting to be very good as a physician. And it turns out that, you know, you don't have to worry about that at this phase. And Tyler Perry has a great attitude towards it. He does not believe in failure. He believes that you come to an opening and you're in a maze. And let's say there's a door in front of you, and the door either never opens or it shuts in your face. And you just go, what did I learn and what can I take forward from this and do differently? And you just turn, and you then just go to the next door, and you just try something else new. And I took that attitude with this. And as far as, you know, the other key thing is you never know where things are going to lead. So I keep emphasizing, you know, when I'm talking to groups or whatever, that to try things and not worry about whether you're going to like it or not, or be great at it or whatever. That's not really the point. That's actually the second freedom, and which is the, you know, freedom of people having expectations, your own expectations of yourself. You no longer have to be perfect. So I had to change my attitude, and my high school asked me to do an exhibition of my photographs. And when it was over, I decided just to donate the photographs. They were big, you know, like 30, you know, 45 by 60 on metal. And I donated to the school saying that you can't put it in a closet. You know, you've got to have them hanging on the wall if I'm going to leave them. And they did it. And it was wonderful, you know, to think that, you know, all these students and faculty and staff were, you know, getting to see these things. And anyway, I then decided that I loved that feeling. It was so much better than trying to be, you know, start another profession as an artist. And I thought, what are some things? I like to link things when I'm trying to come up with new ideas. And I was saying, what else am I passionate about besides photography? And obviously medicine came up. And then that's when I decided I'm going to donate photographs to healthcare facilities. And that has really been a wonderful part of my life.
You know, I do like the idea of, you know, your first fear, you know, getting rid of that fear as we move on in life is the fear of failure. And I love how you solved it by giving away your photography results to, you know, institutions, be it the school or the hospitals, etc. Parallel to that, I feel like this channel has the same concept. It's an authentic conversation with people. We don't sell any promotions on it. It's not for advertisements or anything like that. It's not sponsored by anybody by any chance, by any mean. Just me who does
wonderful
the conversation with people. And I'm not expecting anything back, to be honest with you. I'm not expecting any financial return from it or financial award from it at all. I do have a job, other things I do, and this is my passion. I found out that my passion in life is conversation with people. In fact, this particular version of what I started, it didn't start that way. It started as a coffee with Robin kind of conversation. You know, post-COVID, people were not socializing. They're not going out with people. And I had a reputation before that is that I sit down with people over coffee at Starbucks, at cafes around the world, and I chat with people. So I moved it to a virtual environment. And now it is what it is, the Localization Fireside Chat podcast, which we've, with your conversation right now here, we're up to 253 episodes of talking to executives, influencers, and decision makers. Now, back to the original concept, if you expect financial return from something, you get the disappointment feeling. I get that. Did I achieve well or did I not achieve enough, etc.? I don't have that. And it frees me so well, like I'm so free from that. It is so wonderful that I am not necessarily putting a financial target on the podcast. I didn't do that. I don't want that. If it down the road, if somebody says, hey, Robin, we want to do something with you, fine. But right now I feel so free from it. And I'm sure if it's the same for you, if somebody walked in and says, hey, I'd love to buy this art for X amount of dollars, you're probably going to say yes. You're not going to say no to that. But it's not my main objective.
That is perfect. first of all, I would just say to you, how happy does this make you? I mean,
very happy. To be honest with you, it's my so passion. Wonderful. I'm building software for it on my own. I'm building automation on my own. I'm investing my own self into it. And I stay up sometimes till midnight, try to write codes for it. But that's me. I'm not doing this for anybody else.
Well, That is perfect. that's actually the fourth freedom is freedom from identifying yourself by monetary compensation. And you described it absolutely perfectly. And it's wonderful. And I never planned on being able to give, you know, so many talks and do this sort of thing. And I'm frequently up till 12 or 1 o'clock. And I just can't believe the time has gone by and I'm preparing a talk or getting ready for a podcast like with you. And it's just, it's wonderful because it's deep, deep down inside of both of us that, you know, this is something that we really, really care about. And I also happen to love the whole conversation part of it, which is why I like speaking. And it is so freeing when you can get away from having a finance, you're getting financed from another source, but you're allowing it's just what we talked about. You are allowing yourself to have a part of your life, actually a big part of your life, where you're doing it just for you. This is strictly for you. And it's perfect. I mean, you're teaching people, you know, you are making people better with your podcast. And this is just ideal. This is, and the idea of that freedom is very, very important. But again, you know, not everybody can do it, you know, all the time. It depends on how much you've saved, but you're doing both. You're keeping, you know, financial on one side, but giving yourself permission to be passionate about something else. Wonderful.
No, and I really appreciate that because you mentioned something teaching because we're turning some of these episodes into courses. Similar to this one, I hope it turns into a course down the road where we can take people, the conversation that we've built together and build some sort of a rudimentary, ideas for people to take from this particular episode and the 253 episode that I've done so far. So that's another level that I'm going to be doing down the road. But as I know you do speaking engagements and you've got you've built quite the speaking portfolio. You reach organizations such as the AMA, the American Medical Association, and Neuberger Berman. That's the one I'm aware of. So if you speak in other places I'm not aware of, I'm aware of these two. But what I find about it is that the opposite side of these things. You've got a medical association and you've got a financial management or wealth management firm on one side. Is there a correlation between the two?
Well, I can tell you what occurred with Neuberger Berman, which was really wonderful, which is I'm friendly with the person who's in charge of the wealth management section, and he read the book. And he was he got excited about the book. And it was he decided that they would purchase a number of books, and then we would do a podcast together. And it was perfect. You know, it was a chance to talk to his clients. What it really said was that we care more about you than just your portfolio. That's what this really was about. And I thought it was a wonderful thing to add to what they offer their clients. I would love to do more of that sort of thing. Probably the biggest project was I did for AARP a 3-part presentation, which was they were each like about an hour and a half, and we gave homework and had, you know, interactivity with breakout groups, and that worked out very well, and that was really fun, reached a large audience, and so we're going to be following that up in September with a similar kind of workshop for caregivers. And they're very similar to people who are tired, but it's much harder because they've lost somebody who's significant, or they're worried about losing somebody, and they are also losing the job of being the caregiver. And given that, after that point, the whole challenge is to find a new identity and to find things that are going to make you feel, you know, joyful and purposeful.
Totally. Now, this is the speaking engagement, I guess, for me, that's one of the things that I haven't really tackled yet. And it's one of the things I'd like to do. I haven't done that yet because I haven't had the chance to even look into it to start with speaking engagements, you know, booking and all the logistics that goes through it. But it sounds very interesting. It gives you that duality of platform. You're creating a book, you know, you're a thought leader, you're promoting the book. At the same time, you're helping people. You're teaching them new ways of doing things. So
I think the latter is the most important. And again, you know, I'm lucky that I've saved well and that sort of thing. But selling the book is definitely secondary. Getting the points across to people is much more fulfilling. Just like, you know, donating the art. I have so much information from, you know, the 3 years of research and the 10 years of journaling. And I basically want to share it because, as I said, I didn't have this when I started. And it really can make things much easier and much more exciting. So that's what I love communicating that and getting the word out.
And it's very interesting because you start put yourself out there from the point of helping others, versus either financial gain or promoting something. You'd start from the, and for the audience, this is pretty different angle that we're hearing from Harry here today, is that, and which is admirable, to be honest with you. If you start from the point of helping something or helping someone or helping a community or whatever you're trying to target, I think it's, you get a lot better satisfaction personally, and people around you, they feel that you're helping them, and they end up promoting you indirectly, because that's not the intention. That's not what you're coming in with. You're coming in as a helper, as providing information they didn't have, and you're trying to teach them something. And most people want to hear that versus the infomercial stuff that you hear all the time, and people are tired of that. Am I right, Harry?
Absolutely. And that's how you feel with your podcast, you know. And, you know, once again, it gets back to the freedoms. And the freedoms are what really allow you to go to another level. The freedoms are the things that, once you accept the freedoms and you understand the freedoms, you can do a million different things. And you don't, it's just not a problem. I'll tell you one other little attitude thing is, let's say you're going to take a course on, I'll give you one. I have a friend who wanted to take, who said to me, I'd like to try writing, but I don't think I'd be any good at it. And I just went crazy. And I said, that's not the point. The point isn't whether you're going to be good at it. The point is that you try it. And you'll never know unless you try it. So take a writing course, you know, or even just sit down and try to write. But I think taking a course would be a wonderful way. And you'd also be with other people and that sort of thing, get feedback. And I said, if you don't like it, fine, you know, just chuck it off the list and move on to the next thing. And I just, you know, once you can allow yourself to do these things, and again, you will ultimately get to something that it gives you satisfaction. And that's the one you're going to delve into. But it takes trying a whole lot of different things and giving yourself this freedom to do it. Think about when you were a kid, what did you absolutely love? You know, that you, and then you say, I want to do that. I want to be a drummer, you know, whatever. And you then get to, you know, now you can do it, you know, and you've never, you know, but people have this enmeshment thing is very, very tight. And it's, you know, I can't say enough about trying to just loosen yourself up and giving yourself permission. By the way, I do want to mention that the person who invited me to Neuberger Berman was Jerry Kaminsky. And so definitely want to give a shout out to Jerry, because I really appreciated that. What did I do? I mean, the first thing I did is I took a sketching class with my wife, and we learned how to do it on an iPad, you know, how to sketch cartoons and that sort of, and it was so much fun, you know. And then I'm fascinated by acting. That is something I've always loved. Did it at various stages of my life. And I always wanted to know what it was like when I see all these trucks in New York along the street filming a series or a movie or a commercial. And I decided I want to be an extra. I want to see what's going on inside of there. So I did it, you know. And some people would say, well, you know, he's a physician. What's he doing being an extra in a movie? And, you know, it was a fun thing to do. There is a lot of waiting around, which was not part of my personality. And I did it. And I got it out of my system. And, you know, I'm still fascinated by the trucks, but I know what goes on inside now. And I think it's just important to allow yourself to do that sort of thing.
Now, you mentioned earlier that to a lot of people, like when they, you know, when you work all your life in a certain job, it becomes your identity. And to a lot of people, like changing that, it feels like they're stepping off of a cliff almost, because their name has been attached to what they do as a profession all their, you know, two quarters or three quarters of their lives almost. And then you have to find what is your passion for the next track, for the next thing. And I've seen people, I'm not sure if you've seen it, Harry, I've seen people like, I know one gentleman who decided at his retirement, he wanted to restore a muscle car. He's just, so he goes buy an old car, puts it in the driveway, and he starts tinkering with it. That was his passion. He wanted to do that.
Fantastic.
People have different things that they would like to do, not necessarily, like you and me having podcasts or speaking or writing books. Could be something else entirely, right?
It could absolutely. I know of a surgeon who became a grade school teacher. He absolutely loved it. He's still doing it, and he loves it. It's so totally different, just like this man who's making a car. There's a part of me that would actually like to learn the inner workings of a car and be with a group. There was one in high school, which I didn't get to do, where they took an old car with one of the teachers, they ripped it apart, and they put it back together again. I think that kind of thing is awesome. And if you can do it with a few other people or someone who's teaching you, that could add it to another level. But, you know, there are so many things. In the book, I have a chapter with 100 different opportunities for joy and recreating yourself. And I think that's a great story. I know a couple of people who are one in finance, one in medicine, who became farmers, and they totally loved it. You know what? But I want to get back to the one. You know, the cliff analogy is very real, and it's something to be aware of. That when this time comes, especially if you haven't done much prep for it, meaning, you know, self-reflection yet, it can really be like a state of mourning. And it is, I think the best thing to do is realize you are not alone, and you just sort of live with it for a little while. You just say, I am unhappy. I know a few people right now who are, you know, pretty depressed. And, you know, I keep saying this is not unusual. So don't beat yourself up. Just sort of live with it a little bit. And now start trying some things. And that's the whole way out is to start with little steps and try just doing it. You want to start playing guitar. I have a friend who's an OBGYN, and he had mixed feelings about retiring for a long time. And then he decided, when he did, he decided he would start taking guitar lessons again. And now he loves it. Loves it. And another friend who decided he wanted to, he sang as a, in high school, and he decided to join the choir of his church. And the choir ended up singing at Canterbury Cathedral. And he said it was just one of the coolest things that ever happened in his whole life. And he's a financial guy, you know, so he had it, he really did it. He just went back and he really said, I'm going to try this. I don't know if I'm good enough for this choir. We'll see what happens. And, you know, I would also highly recommend that you, if you can afford it, which doesn't have to be incredibly expensive, getting a mentor, getting someone, if you just want to start something new, you can obviously go online and watch videos. You can, you know, join a group. But if you can get a one-on-one with somebody for a short period of time, it can be extremely helpful for moving you forward.
Now, one of the things is that I was just listening to the examples you're giving. As you mentioned earlier, when we first started, a little briefly that, and I'm not sure if there's any science behind it. Maybe you can tell me. Is there an evidence to perhaps the cognitive side of the human when they go through to that stage of deciding what to do, retire, etc., move on to the next level, where that childhood dreams that they used to have, a childhood thinking they used to have when, you know, you mentioned guitar or farming or something else completely different than what they did in real life. And, you know, I'm always talking on this channel about finding your passion in life and finding, you know, what you're would love to do. If nobody paid you, would you do it? And so, but we tell people to do this nowadays at young age. They end up drifting into a career for financial, economics, whatever reasons they are. And then when you, based on what our conversation right now, based on what I observed for the past 3 years on this channel, it sounds to me like that's not what they wanted to do to begin with. They economically, they did it, and that's fine. But eventually, you know, the old self catch up to them at the next level. And then they end up doing whatever they wanted to do to begin with, but they didn't have a chance to do it.
Well, that's a gift. I think if that can come to you, that, you know, that's really what we're talking about. And it's one, you know, if you can do it, you know, as your career and you love it, that's spectacular. And I mean, one example I can think of is I had the son of a friend of mine, very dear friends from growing up, went all the way through training and residency in a field of medicine, and he was just not loving it. And this took a lot of guts. And he finally decided that he should not finish the last part of the training because he really didn't want to do this for his life. And he then took what his knowledge was and became a consultant. And now, and he's moved to, you know, as many consultants do in healthcare, they end up joining one of the places that they have consulted for and become an administrator. And he is now the CEO of one of the biggest pediatric hospitals in the United States, and much happier than if he had gone into practice in that field that he was in. So if you can do it early, fine. I think, you know, much of what we're talking about is the fact that you've got these extra, hopefully 20 years where not only can you do it, but with all the freedoms, you can really start going back to the things that you're passionate about. And look at you. I mean, you know, you're the perfect example of doing what you want, what makes you feel passionate. And, you know, some people just go, I don't know, how am I going to find what I'm passionate about, you know? And once again, just also think about what would you have done if you hadn't done your career, which is really what you're sort of getting at. And hi, honey.
That's okay.
We're recording live. Hello. Say hi.
We're live it's now. That's okay.
It's getting edited.
You can join the conversation. This happens all the time.
So we can include her.
Wait. Please don't make this a virus.
What?
You know, like, put it on the
internet. It's going to be on the internet.
Oh, that's good.
You know, bye, honey. See you later. Good. Some people have their dogs walk in by mistake.
Don't worry. I've seen it all. Don't worry. This is good.
I've rarely seen the wife walk in with a warning. Anyway.
That's perfect.
So we... Now, she's a really good example of someone who has done it. She designed kids' clothes for many years, which I think she liked. But now she takes Spanish lessons and art lessons and books clubs and, you know, card groups and all that. And, you know, I think there are just, again, there are just so many things, you know, that you can do.
No, Harry, you've appeared at Sirius XM Doctors Radio and also on Retirement Wisdom. How did you do the XM? How did that happen, the Sirius XM?
That happened because my internist, Karen Behar, does a show for them on the Doctor Channel for Sirius XM. And we were having a conversation, just like you and I are having, Robin. And she said, hey, why don't you come and be a guest on the show? And it's usually about women's health, her show. But she wanted to, you know, her husband was retiring and she, you know, thought it would be an interesting subject. And we, you know, tried to focus on that whole thing about, you know, here's this person coming into your life who, you know, is going to disrupt everything. And how do you help with that? So that was really fun. And the other was someone who had heard about me and, you know, and we had a very nice interview.
Cool. It's you know, it's funny because I was interviewing somebody, a couple of weeks ago now? And he mentioned to me, because we were talking and he found out a little bit about my personal story, he said, I would like to get you on my TV show. He's got a TV show in California, I think. And, you know, we're still working the logistics, but, you know, it's how you meet people, how you connect with people. It's amazing what a conversation can achieve, Harry.
Wait, I'm sorry. It's amazing what?
It's amazing what a conversation sometimes can achieve,
oh,
right?
Yes, yes. No, it is amazing. And you just... Again, you never know where things are going to take you. I think you would be perfect for a TV show. I think that would be awesome. You know, just your whole attitude and everything would be you know, terrific.
I'd love to adventure. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, would love to see where that goes. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, I'm still happy where I am. That's fine. There is a, you know, as you know, one of the things that we didn't talk about is there is a huge structural shift happening in the economy right now, right? And you can tell, like, what you're doing, the book and the education that you're giving to people and the help you've provided to people, it's very timely, in my opinion, in my personal opinion. Why? Is because the adoption of new technology, such artificial intelligence right now, is compressing that entire thinking in people's mind. If they're on the edge of, you know, say 45 years old or 50 years old, they're already thinking now of saying, okay, what do I do next? Retire, if I have enough financial support, fine. If I don't, I've got to traject myself into something completely different. Have you seen that acceleration through your conversation right now? Has it impacted where people are?
I have not seen much. I totally agree with that. And I think things are changing very rapidly. And certainly AI has a lot to do with that. I have not, other than maybe seeing some people retiring a little bit younger, I have not had that become a major part of conversation.
No,
not yet. But the principles are going to be the same.
You know, the principles are the same, probably. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't matter if you retire now or you retire 10 years from now. It's the same idea. Right. But does your research on the optimal age of retirement give you any indicators? I mean, perhaps 47 years old should think about it or no?
Well, I'll tell you one other list I made, which is the work. This was while I was working, a work pro con list.
Okay.
So what a work pro con list is if you just write down, and this is not to be discussed with anybody. This is all just within your head. And you write down the pros of your work and the cons of your work. then it's a very dynamic list. And so what I did is I let the things that I've repressed for all these years, you know, everyone has things at work that irritate them, you know, that they basically can't stand, but they're going, okay, hey, you've got a job to do, you know, just forget about it. You know, you can't let this, you know, affect you. Well, if you can allow some of that stuff to come to the front of your brain, and you go, you know what? I really can't stand that. So what happens is the cons become a little heavier. And I should do it this way. You get more cons than you get pros. And once you start allowing yourself to do this, and I don't mean you go out and start confronting people. I mean, you just do this in your own head, that I got to the point where I was borderline anyway at that point, you know, after 36 years in the same field. And in terms of whether I wanted to continue or not. And then when I started doing the pro-con list, and I went, you know, there really is a lot here that I'm really not crazy about. And it's starting to outweigh the pleasure. And one of the biggies was just pressure. The pressure of the volume of the work just got to be, you know, more than I was comfortable with. And so that's one thing that can help you, you know, make that move. If, you know, you're thinking, oh, I'm going to be out of here. How am I going to deal with it? Just start thinking that way. It's going to be a challenge, you know, I mean, to be that young, you know, and I would think the finance would probably be a huge, you know, part of that and looking for other things. You're probably not as free to look for your passion as you would like, but you know, I guess I would, my recommendation would be to compartmentalize it. And, you know, I need to make some more money. What am I going to do? And then, but keep this segment again. I keep saying this, you know, where you do stuff that's just for you, because if you keep trying those things, ultimately you're going to find something that you get very excited about. And then you're going to want to stay up, you know, to 1 or 2 in the morning working on that. And that can turn into a project. I'll give you a phenomenal, phenomenal example of this, and even better than yours. And this is somewhat unique. I have a friend named Mike from high school, and he was a successful illustrator at a high level for major magazines, for newspapers, et cetera, political cartoons, all kinds of things. That as print started to decrease, the need for his work started to diminish. So it turns out he was fascinated by, and he loved baseball, and he was fascinated by pitchers. And what he did, he wanted to see if there was something common in the great pitchers that went across all the lines of the really good ones. And he took videos. He got a hold of the videos of the greatest pitchers of all time. And he analyzed them frame by frame. And because he had incredible knowledge about anatomy because of his illustrating, and he found it. And he found a number of things that they all had in common. And he got to the point where he could actually watch a rookie and say, you know, this guy's mechanics are off and he's going to be out in 3 years. Or this guy is fantastic. So he went, this is incredible. And so he went to a spring training and in Florida, and he was able to get a hold of the coach afterwards. Dean Stadium in Jupiter is very family oriented. You can talk to the players and the coaches and all that. And he went up to the pitching coach afterwards and he said, you know, this guy you had in here today has some serious problems. And the coach looked at him like, you know, what are you talking about? You know, and he pulled out his sketch pad and he drew exactly what this young pitcher was doing wrong. They ended up having lunch. Ultimately, he became a pitching consultant for the Kansas City Royals. Then a few years later, his son got involved. And they have been consultants for 20 of the 30 Major League Baseball teams. And this all started because he had a knowledge of anatomy from something before. And he took his experienced brain.
What a story.
And used it for something else. He'd be a neat person to interview. I mean, he is just, I just have such admiration for him and his son. So
I'd love to interview him on the show.
I mean, that really, I'd be more than happy to connect you. That was astonishing, you know, and he didn't know when he went in his attic and started looking at these films where it was going to lead. And he's actually done the same thing for golf, He's not coaching brilliant. For golfers.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. I'd love to meet him, and I'd love to interview him and interview him on the channel and get his story out. I'd love to get his story on the podcast.
Yeah, that would be very neat. I mean, you know, the other part of this is the difference between really intellect and wisdom, knowledge and wisdom. So intellect and knowledge are knowing a lot of facts. Wisdom, which I think all of us have to a major extent, certainly much more than we had when we were in our 20s, is taking the network of all of these different things that you've learned in your life and then connecting them. And that's what he did. You know, he went, wait, I know anatomy. Maybe I can really look at this. Because not everybody can look at those videos and look out. He's talking about very, very subtle things. And the same thing happened with me and the donating the photography, is that I thought about different parts and I interconnected them. And I think that's another really cool way to come up with new ideas for yourself.
You know, this is very interesting conversation, Harry. I really enjoyed it, to be honest with you. I normally don't talk about retirement that often on this channel, but it's starting to feel to me that it is a conversation we should have more often, by design versus accidental. A lot of people are pushed to these things by either cut because the company laid off people and they're forced to retirement, or make it more, on purpose. You know, you design it, you put it together and make it purposefully designed that way versus somebody else dictating it for you. You manage your own destiny as an audience out there.
Right. And I think, you know, that can be a little overwhelming at first for people to have that attitude, but that is exactly the attitude that you want to have. And, you know, I think the freedoms that we've discussed and everything else really will give you hope that, you know, this is something that you can really turn into an amazing part of your life. It's absolutely, I totally agree with you. And it's really been very fun talking to you.
I really appreciate it. Now, a couple more questions. I guess one of the questions on people's mind right now, if somebody's listening right now to our conversation, and they're thinking like now, 5 years from retirement is quietly terrifying them a little bit. What is the one thing you want them to do this week, or not this decade, but this week, to start planning?
I think the most important thing that you can do is just start. Keep it very simple. Just take one thing that you think you would like to delve into that has nothing to do with your work, that is just deep down inside of you, and just don't worry about it, you know, in terms of whether it's going to work out or not work out. Don't make a big scheme out of it. You don't, just purely for fun. And, you know, I talk a lot about volunteering and teaching and all that. Well, that comes later. But, you know, I think the very first steps are just to open yourself up and then do it. Take one thing that you're going to do today or this week that you're going to look into and see if there's a way that you can either take a course or do something, you know, whatever that might be. I think that's probably the easiest way to get going.
Started. Now, where can people find the book, or follow your work, or reach out to you directly? And we probably want to mention your websites here. You've got a couple of websites. Sure. You want to mention, right?
Right. So the book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and other sites. I did an Audible version, which was very fun. So that's on Audible. And also it's on Kindle, hard copy, soft copy. So all that is available on Amazon and other sites. My website is nextyearsbestyears.com. Very simple. And that gets into the speaking and more information about me and some to some extent the book. There's also a way, if you go to that site, that you can get some free resources. If you want to get a feeling, there's a free chapter. There is the work list. If you want to get the work list on there, that you can do that. And we'll send you all of that, plus a few of the resources. I have 60 references in the book, and we'll send you a few of those. So that's that's like a little starter kit, which I think is, can be very helpful. The other website, if you're interested, again, I'm not really pushing this, but, you know, as you said, if somebody wants it, that's fine. But is Harry Agress, A-G-R-E-S-S, photography.com. And if you scroll down that homepage, you can see something, information about the installations in the hospitals.
No, look, this is exactly the kind of conversation, you know, we'll be including a bunch of other links in the post-edit of the, in the publication of this podcast. I'll include all your links. Your information will go out as well. If somebody needs to get a hold of you via, you're on LinkedIn, right? Do you use LinkedIn at all?
Or? I use LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube.
Yeah.
So I'm really just starting to use them at a higher level, you know, more intelligently. You know, the one thing I would like to add, which I guess is obvious if you go to the book website, is what I really want to do is what we're doing now is, you know, to speak. And I would like to, you know, be able to get to larger and larger audiences, more people. And, you know, just there are, you know, there are 61 million retiree people over 65 in the United States.
We're an aging population. I mean,
and by 2050, it's going to be 80 million. So there are a lot of people out there, and I would like to connect with as many as possible.
Help as many people as possible. That's the what I'm sensing here, the theme for this conversation with Harry. He likes to help people. And that's why he wrote the book, and that's why he's speaking and educating and teaching others how to get to that magic place that is not scary. It's a happy place that you want to be into. Harry, this is exactly the kind of conversation I was hoping we'd do today. I really appreciate your time. Thanks for giving me as much time as you did. Hopefully you enjoyed it as well.
I loved it, Robin. This was just great. Very, very casual and informative and fun. And I can't thank you enough for having me on the show.
And did we cover all the areas you would like to cover? Or did we miss anything? You want to add anything?
I think we pretty much covered it. We covered a lot of things. I think we're pretty good. I'm looking, you know, part of this is also, besides giving yourself permission, is, you know, let your curiosity really, you know, take you away. You know, this is a time to really, answer questions that you've never had, take courses. And I'll just give you, I mean, one thing I want to say as a physician, you know, we've been prepping for this since high school. You know, getting into the right college, then taking all these pre-med courses and everything else. And I have huge gaps in my cultural education. And so I want to start taking some more art classes. I want to even take like an economics class so I just understand it on a big level. Think about what some of the gaps are that you have in your life that you'd like to fill in. And it's just a wonderful time to
do it. Yeah. Hey, I want to thank our guest, Harry Agress, today for joining me. And I want to thank the audience for joining me on this podcast. I really appreciate your time with me. If you're coming on our YouTube channel, thanks for watching us. If you're coming on our audio channels, thanks for listening in. And if you're going to check our blog, go ahead, Harry.
I don't want to interrupt. But one other thing I just thought of that we didn't talk too much about is volunteering. You know, that volunteering or teaching and passing on your wisdom. I think in the midst of all these things that we're talking about, and I would be negligent not to mention this, is an overall sense of purpose. And I think, you know, you can find purpose in many different ways, but I think it's accentuated when mm-hmm. it involves helping other people. So I think it's very good to have some component of that for you, to make you feel good that you're helping other people with what you're doing. And there are just millions of ways to volunteer. Also, remember, if you volunteer and you don't love it, you know, look for another place. You're not bound to that one place. But I think, you know, my teaching is, as I said, it doesn't take a huge amount of time. It gives me a huge amount of satisfaction.
No, I see a lot of people volunteer, and I know a lot of people, they volunteer for many things. Some people volunteer at a hospital. Some people volunteer at a shelter or whatever makes them happy at the end of the day. That's the engagement that they choose. And also, like for me personally, I volunteer on board of associations in the language industry as well. So just to keep myself engaged and to help others based on what I know and support in the language industry globally, for that matter. Again, I want to thank our guest, Harry Agris, and thanks, guys, for joining me on the recording episode 253. And then what I'll do is I'll post and I'll share all the information that we talked about today. I'll put all the links in the publication. And please check out Harry's website. He mentioned them, Next Year, Best Years. And also, we'll put that link in the description of all of our publication as well, so people can access it, so we don't miss anything in the spellings or anything like this. You'll see it in the description. And if you haven't downloaded the app yet, where you can see all of the content, it's called app.ltnnfiresidechat.com, where you can see all of our video, audio, blogs, etc. Everything that we publish is there. Thanks, everybody, and I'll see you at the next episode.
Thanks, Robin. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.